From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Taking charge of a venerable institution can be a challenge, but Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra concertmaster Juliana Athayde and principal oboe Eric Baer weren't daunted when they took the reins of the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester 5 years ago. Since then, there have been new venues, commissioned compositions, even wine tastings. Where to now? We'll find out and hear horn trios to boot next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Again, a room full of wonderful players as we celebrate the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester. Joining me today are the co-music directors, Juliana Athayde. Hi, Juliana.
Hi, Julia.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure, of course, to have Eric Baer in the studio, the oboist.
Great to see you.
And the pianist today is Chao Wen Chang. Hi.
Hi, Julia.
And Peter Kurau. Good to have you, horn player.
Pleasure to be here.
So lots of horn music and lots of horn trios today. The Society of Chamber Music in Rochester is wrapping up another season, and we're going to hear them play in a moment. But we'll start with Juliana and Eric. Juliana, what were your expectations going into this season?
Well, it's always exciting for us when we start to work on planning a new season, thinking about the repertoire, who are the musicians that we're going to invite, and we're trying to create a compelling arc to the season. So when we came up with this concert, Wunderhorn, we knew that we needed our wonderful colleague Pete Kurau, and it was an exciting program to put together because we always love to bring Brahms to our audiences. There's so much color in his music. And then putting together a program that sort of supported that was really exciting.
What lessons, Eric, did you bring into this season from previous seasons?
I think the main one really has to do with programming. We're trying to refine and expand at the same time. So we want to make sure that each program individually really sells itself and that there's something on there that is a little bit different and maybe something that our friends in the society and the public in general haven't heard. So we go back to a very extensive database that goes back 40 years, 41 years now, and so we can see what we've programmed when. So we try not to repeat anything. We actually try and look for things that have been sort of ignored. And it's kind of amazing, especially right now in the current climate we're in. We're, you know, doing a lot of research into female composers and composers of color and going back and seeing very little has been performed. And you can go down the rabbit hole of YouTube and find amazing works out there. So we're constantly searching for that. But to always pair it with something that's a draw, a Brahms or, you know, a Beethoven, something that people are familiar with, feel comfortable with. And then we kind of push them out of their comfort zone, and I think they generally like it.
We're actually going to hear one of those surprises in just a minute or two when we listen to this Karl Reinicke trio for piano, horn, and oboe. This is a really neat piece, and although I've heard it before, it's rarely done.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Karl Reinicke was a wonderful romantic composer, but also a great pianist. He was one of the top pianists in Western Europe for almost three decades, and then he became a conductor of the Gewandhaus Orchestra. So he was a pianist, a conductor, and then after taking Gewandhaus to extraordinary heights, he went on to start or to keep going with the Gewandhaus Conservatory. So he was a great educator. And then later on in his life, I think he slowed down with piano playing and spent a lot of his later years writing about 300 works. So here was a man that did everything. And unfortunately, he's sort of been forgotten by history a little bit, but his works are perhaps a little bit conservative. They're sort of backwards leaning, but always he favors a romantic melody, which I think we love.
The combination is really interesting, Peter. You wouldn't think that oboe and horn and piano would work. You would think that the horn would just drown everything out, but somehow it manages to coalesce. What is the magic of the sound of your instrument and the sound of Eric's?
Well, first of all, we occupy different octaves generally. Brahms was attuned to this, and we often have duets in symphonic repertoire with the oboe and the horn, and the oboe is the octave higher, so that allows the projection to not be a problem whatsoever. And also, I think with regard to the oboe sound, it's such a beautiful concentrated sound, which helps it project through perhaps a larger quantity of sound that the horn might produce.
So let's hear this combination, shall we? We'll be listening to the first movement of Carl Reinecke's trio for piano, oboe, and horn. This is the Allegro. Peter Kurau is our horn player, Eric Baer, the oboist, and Chao-Wen Cheng, the pianist, on Backstage Pass. Thank you. The first movement, the Allegro of Carl Reinecke's trio for piano, oboe, and horn. Peter Krurau, the principal horn player for your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, was the horn player, oboist, Eric Baer, principal oboe for the RPO, and their pianist, who we will talk to now, is Chao-Wen Cheng.
Hi.
Hi, welcome again to the show. You have done a few concerts now with Society for Chamber Music in Rochester. How's your experience been?
Before I answer that question, I want to take this opportunity to thank Juliana and Eric for having me in this wonderful series. I think it's one of the best things in the world to share what you love to as many people as we can, and we're so lucky to be able to do what we love and to also share that with people. So I'm really thankful for them to have me in their series so that I have this opportunity to do what I love to do. So this is my third season. I think that's right. Third season in the series. It's been a wonderful time. Every year they try to program a lot of different repertoire that I either wanted to learn but didn't have a chance to learn yet, or that's something that I just didn't know of. And last year we did a jazz piece, which is out of my normal, usual, you know, repertoire range, but I loved it, and it was a personal growth in that. So I'm really thankful.
How did you shake it off to be able to do the jazz piece? It was a bowling, is that right?
Yes, it was bowling. It was everything written out. So for a classical musician, that makes me feel safer, because, you know, everything, all the notes are there. It's not like you see empty, you know, pages that you just have to improvise. But I listened to, usually in my like leisure time, I listen to a lot of jazz music. So that's something in me, but I just haven't had a chance to do it. And I think coming from a classically trained pianist, it's just a little bit, the touch is different, the pedal is different. So I experimented with it a lot, and I hope people liked it.
Well, you must have done pretty well, because I noticed that a bowling suite for violin and jazz piano trio is in the next season. So you must be,
Yay.
They must have felt that you were ready for that.
Yes, I love to do that again, yes.
You teach at the Eastman School of Music, yes?
I am a staff pianist there. I work with faculty. We did, Juliana and me did a concert 2 months ago together. I work with faculty and I also work with students. I play for their concerts and juries and competitions.
So you have a lot of new music coming you all the time.
Yes, I have to constantly learn a lot of new music. There are just so much that in a world that no one can really learn everything in their lifetime. So there's constantly a lot of, besides the standard repertoire like Brahms, Beethoven, sonatas, there are constantly new pieces. Like I played with one of Juliana's students on the Weinberg violin sonata, which was completely new for me.
So how long does it take you to really feel like you've got the groove of this new piece of music?
It really depends. For some pieces, if I listen to it and read through it, some pieces just click, and some stuff I don't really have to spend a lot of time. I do a lot of mental practicing, so I listen to the music, I read the score, because physically I'm already playing about 10 hours a day. So there's, for me to practice more on top of that, sometimes it's just not possible.
Do you ever get hurt? That's a lot of work on those hands.
Yeah, I know. I fortunately, so far, I've been okay. But I've been taking care of myself really carefully every day. At the end of the day, I make sure I either put hot pad or something to relax my muscles. Because I think once we start feeling the pain, it's too late. So you want to prevent from that to happen.
You must be a tremendous sight reader.
I think I can do some of that, yes.
The Reinecke is beautiful. It has such beautiful lyrical lines. It feels like it's a nice piece to play for a pianist.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you tell when you are playing a piece of music
whether it was composed by, as the Rheinecker was, by a pianist, or when it was somebody who doesn't play piano?
Oh, yes, totally. You can see from the writing that if it's from a pianist composer, because it just totally fits your hands, and that makes it a lot easier. Yeah, like the piece I did with Juliana Kapustin, Violin Sonata, he's a jazz pianist, and yeah, that just makes it a lot easier.
Well, we'll go back to the Rheinecker now and hear another movement of this beautiful piece. This is the finale of Carl Rheinecker's trio for piano, oboe, and horn, Opus 188. And again, Peter Kurau is our horn player, Eric Baer is our oboist, and playing the piano, Chao-Wen Cheng. This is Backstage Pass. Thank you. that's the fourth movement, the finale of Carl Reinecke's Trio for Piano, Oboe, and Horn, Opus 188. Peter Kurow is our horn player, Eric Baer, the oboist, Chao Wen Cheng, the pianist. And this is Backstage Pass as we celebrate the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester. We're going to move from Reinecke to Brahms coming up, which means that Eric Baer will now sit down and take a break. And Juliana Thade, the concertmaster for your Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, will sit in a chair and play for a little while. Juliana, as you look at this season, as it's just drifting away now, were there any surprises that just it was better than you thought it would be?
I think that happens almost every concert. You know, when Eric and I are trying to plan a season, we try and think about, of course, concerts we'd like to perform, but also concerts we'd like to attend. So on the rare occasions when we both aren't playing a concert and we just get to sit in the audience, it's such a treat. And I think what's unique about our series is that we bring people together that you're not going to hear anywhere else playing together. You know, Eastman has a series, and you can hear a lot of the Eastman professors there. But this unique combination with RPO musicians who, in and of itself, we have a lot of camaraderie together. We play together on stage all the time. But when you bring together these musicians from all over Rochester and put them together in a concert that's only going to happen once, there's a certain palpable energy there, I think, that the audience really experiences with us.
Well, I noticed in the next season that you did give yourself a little treat with the bowling jazz violin piece, which is sort of the other side of Juliana.
Yeah, I enjoy playing jazz. It's thanks to my upbringing. My dad is a jazz pianist and kind of just grew up always having jam sessions at home. I thought that was normal. And I've been lucky enough in Rochester to really add that to part of what I do on a regular basis, thanks to Jeff Tysik. Of course, we're going to be performing the Jazz Violin Concerto next year that he wrote for me. So any chance that I get to sort of stretch my wings in that way is very rewarding.
In fact, your dad is a music teacher, right?
He is in California. He teaches middle school music at Stanley Intermediate in Lafayette, California. And I believe they'll be tuning in to hear Backstage Pass.
Well, that is awesome. So hello to California from the cool temperatures of Rochester. Eric, I notice you give yourself a couple of treats every now and then when you put these together as well. The Reinecke is a perfect example. So next season, what is the one that you're giving yourself you're most excited about?
Well, it was kind of Juliana's idea, I'm happy to say. We were looking at the first program, which is a wonderful program, Strauss String Sextet from the Capriccio and the Dvorak String Sextet, and all these string players. And I thought, wow, what, you know, can I take advantage of that? But I probably shouldn't say anything. She was on a roll when we were programming that night. And she said, isn't there some good quintet? So I started thinking, you know, there are a lot of oboe quartets, obviously the Mozart and Breton. But I said, well, there's one by Arnold Bax, which isn't played very often. And I said, but you really got to have a good violin player. I said, I think you're playing, aren't you? So we kind of smiled and I said, well, I'd love to do it. I haven't ever done it before and it's kind of unusual and I think really beautiful and will fit very nicely between Strauss and Dvorak as something people don't know, and hopefully they'll come away saying, wow, that was great.
You've had some new venues and some venue changes as well. So one of these venue changes was to, you tell me, what are you looking for in a venue?
Well, that's a great question. I think, you know, along with programming that we've talked about already this hour and the great performers, the local performers, you know, having just a one-time concert that will never happen again, it's unique in itself, but we know there's more than that to the modern day audience, that you have to give them a great experience. So we started looking around and keep looking around for venues in town that we think are exciting and rewarding. Obviously, Hochstein acoustically is a very superior venue. It's beautiful. But we thought we needed something a little different. And after searching, we ended up at the very top of the Strathallan Hotel. And the views up there are extraordinary, of 270-degree views of downtown and looking over the suburbs. So we have a concert at the beginning and the ending of each season at the top of the Strathallan. And we're very excited about that because it's incredible. It's a view. It's an experience for people to come in to look out. It's kind of inspiring. And we also add wine tasting at intermission. Luckily, that's been sponsored by the good folks at Pinnacle Wine and Liquor. They're very supportive, and they pick out some really interesting different wines that I would never try. So we enjoy that, too.
How did that happen? How did this wine tasting happen?
Well, I think we just kind of played off of the experiences that I think all musicians enjoy when we're traveling to summer festivals and kind of that relaxed atmosphere that brings people together and inspires conversation. And we thought, well, what if we let the audience, you know, have a little fun at the intermission? And it sort of has brought people together. People have met new friends at the concerts. And I think it's just an extra added bonus. If you come to our concerts, hey, wine tasting.
What could go wrong? This is Classical 91.5, and you're listening to Backstage Pass. We will now dip into the Brahms, and we're going to hear, to begin with, the second movement, the Scherzo, of Brahms Trio for Horn, Violin, and Piano, Opus 40. Peter Kurau, again, is our horn player, and Chao-Wen Cheng, the pianist, and Juliana Thade, the violin. Thank you. The Scherzo from Brahms' Horn Trio. Peter Kurauer, our horn player, Julian Athey, the violinist, and Chao Wen Cheng, the pianist. Peter, I understand you have quite an affinity with this piece of music.
This is one of our absolute favorites in the repertoire. And
why?
Not just horn repertoire. I mean, this is a masterpiece of the entire, you know, era of music history from antiquity to the present day. We're so fortunate to have it in our particular repertoire as well.
What do you like about it? Why is it so important?
Well, first of all, Brahms actually was a horn player. It's not a well-known fact, but he did play the horn. There's a rather famous picture of him with a hunting horn draped around his shoulders. And he played violin, and he played piano. So he's very, very familiar with the idiosyncrasies and potential of all the instruments. And he writes just so beautifully and effectively for each of the instruments.
I love, Juliana, that sort of the downbeat, that chord, that harsh chord, that's very cool sound.
Yeah, I think it's refreshing, and it's this energy in this movement that Pete mentions, the hunting horn. I think Brahms really knows how to bring out every facet of the horn.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are not just the principal horn player for the RPO. You also have a full studio at the Eastman School of Music. So how in the world do you find time for living?
Living is going to be for retirement, I think. right now, I'm really enjoying all of the opportunities and challenges of those two wonderful positions that I happen to have.
Of course, you do the holiday horns for Live from Hochstein every year. When you're auditioning your horn players, what are you listening for? Because it must be more than just, are they hitting the notes?
That's a very good question. You're looking for people who don't need significant remediation, number one. If they are coming to the Eastman School, you don't want to spend a lot of time fixing bad habits. It's not really fair to them to spend that kind of money, to be perfectly blunt, nor does it allow us to keep the standard high enough in the studio and in the ensembles. So if they need significant remediation, that's going to be a tough road for them to hoe to get in. So you're looking for people then that are proficient, that need to be developed without having to take any steps backwards. And the other little thing, there are two other components to the audition that I factor in. One is we pride the fact that the horn studio at Eastman is quite familial, and that serves as an asset to all of their education because there's such good interaction with their colleagues in the same studio. So I try my best to make sure that I sense and weed out any potential bad apples, if you will, so that they don't sort of pollute that environment. They can be phenomenal players, but if I don't think they're going to fit the culture that we've got going there, then I think that they're going to be looked at with a little bit more scrutiny. And then the other factor is, this is sort of an anecdote from my esteemed predecessor at the Eastman School, Vern Reynolds, with whom I studied for my bachelor's degree. He said, you know, when you evaluate all these candidates, you look at their playing credentials and their audition and their high school transcripts, which are important, and, you know, their SAT scores, also important, whether they would fit into the culture of the studio, also very important. He says, the last question you ask yourself is, do you want to see that student at 4:30 on Friday afternoon? You know, because you're going to be teaching them at 4:30 or 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Do you want to spend time with that student? So the ones that I have up there, I'm really, really pleased with all of them, and I'm more than happy to teach them at 4:30 on a Friday afternoon.
You know, I have this mystery that I need to have fixed, because for years I've been going to the RPO, and I notice that while you may play in a concert, you don't necessarily play in all of the concert. And the horn line seems to change sometimes from piece to piece. So what's that all about?
Well, first of all, I'm very fortunate that I am the only wind or brass player in the RPO that actually has a designated, contracted assistant or associate principal horn in this case, Nicolette Labontes, who's doing a great job. I know that Eric, my beloved colleague here, covets the fact that you know, I have an assistant, you know, and so I have the luxury then of being able to take off pieces, and so that my lips stay fresh for, shall we say, the more significant stuff on the program. That's not to say that the Higdon Harp Concerto, which we're doing this week, is not significant, but I have to play the Britten C interludes, and then we have this, you know, epic piece, Brahms' Second Symphony, looming on the second half. So I have to make sure I have enough in the tank to get to that and do that effectively.
Mystery solved. Thank you, Peter. Let's go back to Brahms now on Backstage Pass. This is part of the first movement, the Andante of Brahms, Trio for Horn, Violin, and Piano. Peter Kuro, who we just talked to, is our horn player, Juliana Athey, the violinist, and Xiaowen Cheng, our pianist. This is Backstage Pass. Thank you. The Andante portion of the first movement of Brahms' Trio for Horn, Violin, and Piano. Peter Kurau, the horn player, Juliana Thay, the violinist, Jiawen Cheng, the pianist. This is Backstage Pass as we celebrate the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester. And the Chamber Music, the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester, has this very long tradition of outreach for schools, for kids. And you also, you have the Young Composition Award as well, the competition. So how have you extended, Eric, this tradition?
I think we, you know, carried it on. And one of the big things we're doing now with our outreach is we actually have an established quartet of RPO musicians, the Salif Quartet. And they're wonderful. And not only are they great musicians, but they're a little bit on the younger side, which is great for sending them out into schools because there's a lot more possibility for kids to relate to people that are not, you know, maybe my age. So they see a younger person there and they think, oh, that's great, I could do that. And these guys are wonderful at engaging the young kids. So we do that. And the other thing we've started is actually a collaboration with Eastman through the Howard Hanson Institute, where we now have our composition winners. So every year we have an alternating. Either it's going to be a high school division within New York State or it's going to be a college division in New York State. And we've had some amazing young composers that have gone on to do great things that have won. And now what we do is we've actually collaborating with the Eastman Chamber Music Department, and we have students from Eastman come and play in our series, and we pay them as professionals, and they get to work with these young composers. And we find that on many levels it's rewarding because, first of all, they get the experience of playing in a professional environment on a series, but also working with the composers. It's a two-way street because some of these composers may end up being lifelong composers that they will go on in their professional field and career having a relationship with. And they can often help the composer, especially if it's a younger composer. And they can say, this is a great piece, but, you know, guess what? The oboe doesn't have a low A, or generally doesn't. So they can then help the composer with little technical things. So I think the many areas that, you know, putting students together with young composers is really beneficial and rewarding.
How many submissions, Juliana, do you get for the composition? Well,
I mean, it varies year to year depending on, you know, how well we get the word out and how many, you know, contacts we initiate. But it usually gets whittled down to choosing between about 3 to 5 works that we're really interested in. And that's coming down from about 35 or 40 submissions.
How do you judge a piece you've never heard or played?
Well, fortunately, on our wonderful board at the SCMR, we have some wonderful composers on our board. We've got Davey Temperley, who is one of the theory professors at Eastman, and also Jim Willey, a longstanding board member who's a composition professor at Geneseo and a wonderful composer in his own right. And they sort of do the initial legwork for us and sort of sort through. And when they get sort of to a deadlock, they call us in and they say, okay, guys, we want to know. What do you think? And it's been pretty amazing. But Eric and I sit down and we listen to all these works and they're all great. But we usually gravitate towards the same piece.
When you're working, as I know, when you're working with Jennifer Higdon this week, as you're working on the harp concerto, I know there's been a little push, a little pull. We're going to change that mark. We're going to change this note. It has been a fluid experience. Is the same thing happen for your composition winners? Do they have to come in and go through that process as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And from a practical standpoint, that was another reason why having this collaboration with the Eastman School and having students come and play has been beneficial because, you know, if you're putting a bunch of busy professors and RPO performers together, they don't have a lot of time to rehearse for a concert, and especially if they're premiering a brand new work by a young composer, that maybe needs to be tweaked a little bit. You really got to give that a lot of love and a lot of time. So I think it's been really great in that way that the students are able to spend a bit more time with the piece and really help the composer, and the composer at the same time can help them and push them. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, all these new works that come out push us as composers. At one point, Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven all knew too. So, you know, I think it's a wonderful balance actually between composers that push us as performers and then maybe that we give them a little push back to say, hey, that's not really possible. So
don't give me that low A.
Yeah, right.
So what happens in one of these school sessions when your quartet goes out and they work in the schools? What exactly will these kids experience?
Well, what's really great is, of course, they're getting a taste of the performance. So the quartet will look at our season and they'll piece together some things that are not exactly what we're going to perform, but kind of connect the students either to that era, to that composer. And then they'll also do master classes. So they'll listen to student groups, whether it's chamber groups or solo instruments. So these students are getting a really great interaction with these professional musicians, and it's in a relaxed atmosphere. So we hope that it fosters a love of music, a love of chamber music, and, you know, creates a connection for us.
And to that end, actually, the board has made it so that any student that comes with a valid student ID, any age, gets into our concert for free. So we're doing really everything we can to make sure we pass on this great music to another generation.
So why is chamber music important?
Well, I think that for us, since the three of us, me and Peter and Eric, make our life in the orchestra, any chance to connect on a more personal and intimate level with other musicians is very rewarding. And the repertoire is fabulous. You know, the combinations, we've tried to really explore different combinations. And of course, you can go hear the Ying Quartet masterfully perform string quartet repertoire. But we're doing things like, you want to hear the Beethoven Septet? Come join us, you know? So we're trying to explore different combinations and pieces that maybe you don't hear as often because they take a bigger task force. But it's been a very rewarding experience for us and I think for our audiences alike.
What do you say to young players? And you are both teachers. One of my favorite moments was once when Anna Kiko Myers talked about how every now and then when she's finished with her solo, she'll grab her violin and go sit in the back of the violin section and join them for the orchestral playing. What do you say to youngsters who come in and want to be a star?
Well, I teach at Eastman. I'm an associate professor there, and I have a studio of my own violin students, but I also work with mostly all the violinists at some point in my orchestral repertoire classes. And I used to start the class with, raise your hand if you think you're going to be a soloist. And, you know, a few tender souls would raise their hand. And, you know, I would usually say, that ship has sailed. But I've curtailed my response now. And what I really want them to know is that studying orchestral excerpts has nothing to do with whether or not you want to be in an orchestra. It has to do with getting to know these composers, learning the language, perfecting your own craft of playing, and basically telling them that if you're lucky, you'll play in an orchestra. And pretty much no matter the path that your musician life takes you, you'll have some time that you play in an orchestra, and let's make it a wonderful time.
I want to thank you for making this a wonderful time. It's been a wonderful day indeed. Our guests today for the Society for Chamber Music in Rochester. Our executive producer is Jean Fisher. Our audio technician is Andrew Croucher with help from Robert Braden. And many thanks to Juliana Athade, Eric Baer, Chao-Wen Cheng, and Peter Kurau. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.